Elizabeth Elliot says that God knows the end from the beginning. He loves us, He is wise, He's powerful, and He calls us to put our faith in Him, to set our feet on that rock which will never move. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Secure in the Everlasting Arms and God's Guidance, A Slow and Certain Light. As you put your faith in the solid rock, study the unchanging word with us today. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about the Creator's design. Not long ago, my husband and I were in Australia, and we had the tremendous privilege, which was for me the culmination of a dream of a lifetime, to go to the Great Barrier Reef. We flew up to a little resort town called Cairns, stayed the night there, and we went from there by bus up to a small jumping-off point called Port Douglas. From there, we took a boat out to just a steel pontoon, which was anchored on the Great Barrier Reef. We learned all kinds of fascinating things on the boat going out. There was a marine biologist aboard who not only explained some of the things that we could look for if we were going to snorkel or scuba dive or go out in the glass-bottom boats, but also gave us some previews of possible coming attractions. And among the things which she told us to look for was fish who seemed to be doing absolutely nothing, lying in a very relaxed way on the bottom of the sea. And she said, if you'll look very closely, you may see that they are being cleaned by what we call cleaner fish. And there are these tiny little fish about the size of sardines who make it their business to clean the larger fish. They clean off the dead scales, the parasites, or whatever. And there are times when the larger fish actually line up, or as they say in Australia, queue up for their turn as cars in a car wash. Well, I could hardly wait to get out there, and the first thing that we did was to take what they call the glass bottom boat. It was actually a boat with a glass belly where you could sit and look straight out on a level with the coral reefs and these incredible, vari-colored fish. It was just beyond description, but I'll do my best. The colors were just unimaginable, a far greater variety of colors than I had any idea coral could be. I remember particularly an antler-shaped coral that was an electric blue. It was really a color that I've never seen anywhere else in the world. The luminosity of the light as it came through the water, which was perfectly clear, as the biologist had explained to us, because the water is sterile, was really just unbelievable. And here were these purple and yellow fish, and fish with zebra stripes, fish with polka dots, and all of them swimming seemingly lazily around and coming right up and staring us in the face through the glass windows. When that was over, we had a sumptuous buffet lunch on board the boat, and then we could help ourselves from bins on the deck of the pontoon to any kind of snorkeling or scuba diving equipment that we wanted to use. So having snorkeled around in front of my house on the coast of Massachusetts, where we don't see anything like tropical reefs, I chose to snorkel. And as soon as I put my face in the water, I found myself in a magical world, a world of silence, of light, of swarming movement, of greatly varied colors and shapes and sizes and designs. As I was swimming along, transfixed by the slow opening and closing of a giant clam, which I'm told weighs about 300 pounds, looking at the purple velvet siphons and tubes that were going in and out of the scalloped lips of that clam, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a large shape move into my vision, And immediately I thought, is this going to be a whale or a shark? The lady had told us that we didn't need to really worry about sharks. If there were any, they would be the harmless kind. But no, instead of that, it was wearing a pair of striped shorts. And it turned out to be one of my fellow passengers from the boat, a large gentleman with a very pendulous white belly hanging down as he swam along, also snorkeling. So I made a fast left turn and went on watching the reefs and the fish that live in those reefs. But when I came out of there, it was even more difficult for me to believe than it has always been that there are actually people who do not believe that it was made by somebody. Because I'm a Christian, I affirm what Christians have always affirmed. The first statement of what's called the Apostles' Creed is, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. And that maker designed things in his mind before he actually created them. Somehow or other, the non-believer has no trouble believing that mind came from something. To me, it's much easier to believe that something came from mind. As someone has pointed out, the chances that Shakespeare's plays could have come out of pure chance, just the shaking up of X number of letters in the English alphabet, the chances of something like that happening would be far greater than the chances of this world that you and I live in evolving from nothing. I believe in God the Father Almighty. I believe that this world was created by Him, it was created for His glory, and He has put every creature in exactly the right place. One of the great hymns of the faith was written by Joseph Addison, an 18th century poet, and it closes with these words, "In reason's ear they all rejoice and utter forth a glorious voice, forever singing as they shine. The hand that made us is divine." And that hand designed and created things which were appropriate to their intended use. Can we imagine that a designer who could create the coral reefs and the galaxies and the molecules had nothing in mind when he created a man and a woman except reproduction? Can we imagine that the glorious design of the male body and the very different but equally glorious design of the female body means nothing at all? Sometimes I've said to people, well, what do you think sexuality means? And somehow or other their eyes glaze over and they say, what do you mean? What does it mean? You mean sex? No, I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about sexuality. I'm talking about a divine design. Well, where do I get my cues? I go back to the Bible every time. And in the very first chapter of the Bible, we find that God not only made the moon and the stars and the sun and called light into being just by His word, but it says He created man in His image. Man, of course, includes man and woman. It's a generic term. We all understand that, I'm sure. But in the image of God created He them, male and female. So when somebody tells you we ought to forget about these ideas of male and female and just think about persons, my answer to someone like that would be, well, you know, it really wasn't our idea. You and I would never have thought of it, not in a million years. It was God's idea. And there's no reason to apologize for or to attempt to obscure or to erase what was God's original design. We can find three things in the first chapter of Genesis that we know about both men and women, which might lead us to the conclusion that they are equal. There are certainly some ways in which we are equal. We are equally made by God. We were equally created in His image. And we were created for a purpose. And I think that purpose is hinted at in God's original command. The first command that He gave to Adam and Eve was be fruitful and multiply. And as we all know, it takes two to tango. Neither the man nor the woman could have obeyed that command alone. It took their cooperation. Now, you know, I didn't write this story. It's in the Bible. And when I get into the second chapter of the Bible, I find some even more fascinating things about man and woman, which indicate that there is a tremendous difference, a very important difference, many differences, in fact, between men and women. I couldn't improve on God's design, could you? Sometimes you may hear somebody say, well, that bit about Adam and Eve, that's just a myth. That's a folktale. That's a legend. Well, had to begin somewhere, didn't it? Certainly the human race had to begin with a man and a woman someplace, somehow. It seems to me God's story makes sense. He created a world of beauty and function and harmony.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and The Path of Loneliness, Finding Your Way Through the Wilderness to God. This is Joy Rayleigh. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.